It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
We're about to start week four, and we're starting with off-the-field news. Last week, Nebraska taking on Northern Illinois, and it did not end well for the Bug Eaters. If you're not sure who the Bug Eaters are, learn your college football history. Here is former athletic director Sean Eichhorst after the Northern Illinois game.
It's 100% important for us all to stay together, but as I've told the other media members, you know, I'm angry and I'm frustrated and I'm disappointed, no different than our players, our students, and our coaches. But the bottom line is you know, we have got to get better and do better and win games. And I'm sure Mike said that, and I know he believes that, and he has our support, but we need to hang together. There have been times in our history, and there have been times, you know, this year where we've seen a lot of adversity and we've seen a lot of resiliency, and there was resiliency again today, but those, you know, those don't matter. What matters is us winning football games, and I'm going to continue to do everything I can to show the leadership for us to get that done.
Sean Eichhorst said he is going to show the leadership that it took to keep everything together, but the administrative leadership, the chancellor, and everyone else, that'd be University System President Hank Bounds, Chancellor Ronnie Green, they met with the entire coaching staff on Thursday. Well, the entire coaching staff other than head coach Mike Riley. He was informed in a different meeting, but they met with the football staff and said, hey, actually they met with football staff, basketball staff, gymnastics staff, every sport there except Mike Riley, to tell him that Sean Eichhorst had been given the axe. They met with Riley separately. What does that mean? Well, even Riley doesn't know what that means. He, in fact, said later that he thought he was pulled aside out of respect for his relationship with Eichhorst. And if you remember, when Riley got the job, he got the job because he was friends with Eichhorst. Him and Eichhorst had worked together before, and Eichhorst wanted to bring him in from Oregon State, got him in. But now the question is, how long does Mike Riley last at Nebraska? Now, I know a lot of Colorado fans are just torn up that Nebraska is in such dire straits. They're 1-2. They barely beat Arkansas State, a Sun Belt team. They won that 43-36, then lost to Oregon, had the good second half comeback, but Oregon's not a good team. And then they lose 21-17 this last week to a MAC team in Northern Illinois. Now, this week, they take on Rutgers. We can count that as a win. They have Illinois after that, chalk up another win. They're sitting right there at 3-2. You know, not too bad. Not great, but not too bad. But then, Wisconsin, a loss. Ohio State will be a loss. Purdue's putting up points, and Nebraska, the pink shirts, can't stop anybody this year, so Purdue will be a loss. Northwestern will be a loss, and Northwestern will be in Lincoln. At Minnesota, they should win that game. And then they finish the season, Penn State and Iowa, two more losses. So, best case scenario, you're looking at 4-8 for Nebraska. Followed that up by last year's horrible showing, 5-7, still making a bowl game because no one else was eligible. I can't believe Nebraska, the proud program that they are. Well, they don't have anything to be proud of right now. But they still took the bowl bid and lost in the bowl. 4-8, they're not getting a bowl bid. Mike Riley's not getting another year. So the question is, who will be the next head coach at Nebraska? And did this make Riley, the firing of the AD, did it make him a lame duck coach? Of course it did. Of course it did. Riley can do nothing unless he runs the table and they go 10-2. That ain't going to happen. If they do that, he might be able to keep his job. New AD will be hired sometime soon. Probably, I'd say, later in the season. Riley might make it through the season because I don't think an assistant AD who's acting would have the cojones to go in and axe Riley during the season. But you lose to Rutgers, and Illinois, it might happen quicker than we think. But who's going to take the position? Well, you got Les Miles' kid who's going to school in Nebraska, playing ball at Nebraska. So is Les Miles, is the grass eater going to Hatt? Is he going to Nebraska? Well, bad news for Les Miles is Memorial Stadium in Lincoln is artificial turf, no grass to eat there. So they've also talked about former quarterback Scott Frost, who is still at Central Florida. Would he be a possible replacement for Mike Riley? We're going to have to wait and see how this plays out. But Sean Eichhorst, man, in the immortal words of Donald Trump, you're fired. So where does that take us to there? Well, you have to look at Nebraska a lot like you looked at Penn State 4 years ago. Okay, yeah, Bill O'Brien had been there, but Bill O'Brien had to deal with what was pretty much a death penalty for the Nittany Lions after Sandusky Gate. We're not going to get into that. Don't want to talk about pedophiles this early in the morning. But so you've had James Franklin's been there for 4 years. He's got them number 5 in the nation, number 4 in some polls. It all depends on what you're looking at. So Riley, you know, has been there 3.5, going on 4 years. It's his players. It's his system. So if Penn State can do it, being as down as they were, why can't Mike Riley do it, who is following up a 9-3 season by Bo Pelini? Why can't Riley do it? Then you'll hear the arguments. Well, it's in Nebraska. Who wants to go to Nebraska? There's nothing there. It's in the middle of the country. It's surrounded by nothing. You could say the same thing about Oklahoma. You could say the same thing about Iowa. Have you ever been to Iowa City? Not a whole lot there other than the campus. Yeah, Des Moines right there. But then you got Omaha, not far from Lincoln. So when both those places don't sound like fun to go, Des Moines or Omaha, except Omaha, you got some good steaks there. But Madison, Wisconsin, yeah, it's pretty. It gets cold, but it's are surrounded by nothing. Minnesota, you can make a difference because, you know, Minneapolis is kind of a metropolitan city. I don't know what's going on with the whole makeup of the city government right now. That thing's in a shambles, but we're not talking government right now. We're talking football. Minnesota, but they don't get anybody there. Minnesota has not had a good program. They had a couple good years when Tracy Clays was filling in as the head coach because of Jerry Kill having his medical episodes. But so you can't say that Nebraska, because they're in the middle of the country, can't have success, because Oklahoma State's doing it. Oklahoma's doing it. Like I already said, Wisconsin. And then Arkansas, you know, you're getting border in to where people think more south and east. But still, I mean, because Arkansas is pretty much, Fayetteville is pretty much due south of Lincoln. But anyway, so Nebraska, where are you going for the next head coach? Is it going to be Les Miles, who is just about the same age as Mike Riley and out of touch with those players, except that he has a kid playing there at Nebraska, so he does still have that youthful connection there, but I don't know if he's still in touch with the kids the way he would have been when he was at LSU. He doesn't have the marquee status that he had when he was at LSU because he got fired. When you get fired, that's all these kids today are going to remember going, hey, didn't you get fired from LSU? Aren't they still doing good? Would Scott Frost bring him back? Well, you know, he is a former player, might have a bit of panache because of that, but he's been a player so long ago, I don't know if the players today remember that. Scott Frost had some success there as a player, hasn't had a whole lot of success as a coach, but do you still bring him in? He was part of the Oregon offensive machine, so we'll see what happens there. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about games going on this week. That's enough off the field stuff. When we come back, I'm going to break down Colorado and Washington and Oklahoma State and TCU, two of the bigger matchups of the week. And then we'll hear from Jim Arthur, the voice of the Air Force Falcons, as they get ready to take on San Diego State. They've got Penny at back now. They don't need Pumphrey because Penny is playing better than Pumphrey did. I don't know how that's possible, but it's true. And then we'll break down what I think is one of the biggest games of the week, that being Iowa and Penn State. We'll talk about that when we come back right here on Extra Sports 1300. You're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
Now, the biggest game in the Pac-12 this week has to be Washington coming to Boulder to take on the CU Buffs. They're going to experience a test for the first time this season when they open Pac-12 play. Now, number 7, Washington, 3-0. They've played 3 overmatched opponents, so it's hard to gauge the readiness of the team heading into the more demanding part of the schedule, because you look at what they've had before, and it hasn't been much. But even Coach Chris Peterson had to admit the first 3 games weren't of the arduous variety. He said, "Away we go, and now we start the hard part of our season. The one thing that you notice for the most part is everybody realizes league has started now, and the intensity of those games kind of feel a little bit different. It's not like kids play harder or don't play harder depending on the game, but maybe leading up to it, there's a little more focus. Everybody understands how competitive the Pac-12 is." Now, last year, when you looked at the championship game in the Pac-12, Colorado and Washington, the Huskies rolled, I mean rolled, to a 41-10 victory in that meeting. That was the first of 2 very poor defensive showings by Colorado. Now, Colorado, you know, they're 3-0, and they've really haven't played anybody either. Yes, the Colorado State game was very close, but we'll have to see what happens in this game, because now when you start talking about it, the one person that Colorado is going to be talking a lot about is Dante Pettis, the nation's top punt returner, also the top receiver for them. The senior returned a punt for a score in each of Washington's first 3 games to tie the record for most consecutive games with a punt return touchdown. David Allen did that for K-State back in 98, and Ryan Switzer did it for the Carolina Tar Heels back in 2013. But his 77-yard touchdown return in last Saturday's game over Fresno State was the 8th of his career, which ties him for the NCAA mark. Who's he share that with? Wes Welker. We know about Wes. Went on to have a fine NFL career. And Oklahoma's Antonio Perkins. I remember the 2001 to 2004 seasons with Perkins there. It seemed like every time the ball was kicked, they were ready for him to run it all the way back. But that's the same thing you have to worry about with Dante Pettis. The ability of the Colorado junior punter Alex Kinney to prevent those returns could be a key factor. You don't really think about the punter playing such an integral role in the game, but he's punted 15 times in the first 3 games. Only 2 of those were returned. So good job on special teams for CU, only giving up 9 yards on those 2 returns, but Pettis, keeping him in check is going to be crucial for Colorado in its bid to halt its 7-game skid against the Huskies. Yes, they haven't beat Washington the last 7 times they have played him. Now, sophomore quarterback Steven Montez has to have a good game. The first-year starter, he's been great so far this year, completing 68% of his passes, just shy of 900 yards, but he does have a 2-to-1 ratio. So every 2 touchdowns he throws interceptions. He's got 6 TDs on the year and 3 picks. Now, the tailback, the running back, Philip Lindsay, he's leading the ground game with 378 yards and 3 touchdowns. And defensively is where you really got to question Colorado. Now, you got Drew Lewis has 35 tackles so far this year, and senior defensive end Leon Jackson III's got 4 sacks. Cornerback Isaiah Oliver, not doing too bad, 2 picks already. And Lewis is the first Colorado player to post 10 or more tackles in his first 3 career starts since Greg Beekert did it in 1990. And you know how that season ended up for the Buffs, so maybe we'll see how this year goes. So it's going to be a tough game tonight up in Boulder, and you can hear that game just a little bit later tonight on right here on Extra Sports 1300. Another game you'll be able to hear here on Extra Sports is going to be Oklahoma State and TCU. Now, how good is TCU? That's a good question. You know, they've had the stiffest test of the two teams because Oklahoma State has played Tulsa, they've played Southern Alabama, and they've played Pitt. Yeah, that Pitt game, it looked like you were playing NCAA football on Xbox or on the PlayStation, the way Mason Rudolph was throwing the ball around the field. They're going to see a little bit tougher defense in Gary Patterson's Horned Frogs. Now, the Horned Frogs are going to see a better defense in Oklahoma State than they saw in Arkansas. And then when you look at these two teams, now, if the Big 12 is going to do anything this year, if they're going to do anything, the hopes of the Big 12 hinge on Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. TCU could do something, but they'd have to beat both teams and run the table for them to even get a look, get a sniff for the college football playoff. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are the true two hopes for the Big 12 to think about the college football playoff, and they're going to play here in a few weeks and then most likely play in that revamped Big 12 championship game. But this game is going to be in Stillwater today. TCU and Oklahoma State. Can the mullet, of course, that being Mike Gundy, he's now 50, he's really a man, but can he coach up against Gary Patterson? Patterson's had his number a few times, but Oklahoma State's been playing really well this year, been playing real well last year. A lot of people are picking them to go to the playoffs. I don't think they're that good. I know you don't think they're that good, unless you're an Oklahoma State fan, and then I do apologize. So if you're at good times right now going, hey, wait, they are that good. Well, they can be. We'll have to see how it works out because that matchup of, the hookup of Mason Rudolph and James Washington has been electric this year. It has. Mason Rudolph leads the nation in so many different categories right now as far as passing statistics go, but he's going to be facing a stiffer test in TCU, like I told you. And so who's going to win this game? I'm going to have it picked later in the show with a special guest picker this week. Every week it's a special guest picker. This one a little bit more special because he has a job that keeps him busy so much all through the week. And so I'm proud to have him on the show this week. We'll find out who that is in just a few minutes. But right now, I've told you about the two games that are going to be here on Extra Sports 1300. There's going to be a game on our sister station, 740 KVOR. We're joined now by Todd Leonard from the San Diego Union Tribune. And as we get ready for Aztecs and Falcons later today on our sister station, 740 KVOR. Todd, how you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
Thanks for joining the University of Fish this morning. And now, we've seen last year, Donnell Pumphrey ran over everybody, but it looks like you got a guy this year who might be even better.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. And, you know, here in San Diego, we knew this was coming with Rashad Penny. Certainly last year showed a bit of it. But when you watch this guy in practice for the last few years, we knew that, you know, he was pretty special and that, you know, he was at least going to be, you know, in Pumphrey's, you know, range at least. And I think what we're seeing is that he may be, you know, a better all-around running back than Pumphrey just because he's bigger and he can run through holes in the middle of the line better. Pumphrey was certainly good at everything, but he was much better running on the outside and the perimeters, where Rashad Penny sees holes in the middle of the line, you know, gets through them really quickly, and then his second level speed is pretty phenomenal for his size. And so, you know, he just doesn't get caught, which is, you know, a really big trait, obviously, and it certainly shows in his kick return prowess too. Same thing. He busted a couple of holes and he's gone, you know, 99 yards. So just a great combination of skills for him. So, yeah, it's kind of more of the same at running back for them.
Well, earlier this week, head coach Troy Calhoun of the Air Force Falcons compared him to Eric Dickerson. He's not as big as Dickerson was, but I do see that breakaway speed as well. But if it's not Penny, what do the Aztecs have on offense that can go up against his Air Force defense?
Well, I think there's a couple of things, and they certainly showed it last week against Stanford, is they have a much more formidable receiving core this year. just more physical guys, taller guys. Some of the younger guys are in the 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", range, which they haven't really had tall receivers at the school in a while. The other thing that you really need to watch for at San Diego State offensively is they have an amazing core of linebackers, amazing core of tight ends at this point. David Wells caught the game winner against Stanford, and he hasn't even been their leading receiver. Kahale Waring is a kid to watch for. He's number 97, and he's a kid who didn't play football until his senior year of high school, played about every other sport, including goalie and water polo, and this kid is an incredible athlete. And so they've just been really strong at tight end. So what's interesting with them is that they'll put this tight end package out there, and you think, okay, they're going to run the ball, and then they throw the tight end, and it's extremely effective. Christian Chapman is a different quarterback this year. He's much more confident. He's much more comfortable with the offense. So it's just a better, more rounded offense than I think the Aztecs had last year.
Now, when we look at the other side of the ball, you're going up against that crazy option that Air Force runs, but your coach is no stranger to it, at being at New Mexico and now at San Diego State. What do the Aztecs have to do on offense to shut down Timothy McVay and the rest of the Falcon offense?
Well, I think what's been proven, and I believe the stat is the Aztecs are 6-0 against Air Force in the last six meetings. I think that's pretty evident of where Rocky Long's skill is in defending, option type offenses. I would bet that there are few defensive coordinators in the country who are more schooled and better at defending option offenses than Rocky Long is. So it's a matter of his defenses work against them. It's a matter of whether, the personnel on the other side of the ball is so much better, or his own personnel just doesn't quite catch up to Rocky's schemes as quickly. And this is not a super veteran offense or defense, I should say. So there is that concern for the Aztecs of how quickly they're going to adapt to the scheme. But there will be no better scheme that Air Force faces this season probably than Rocky Long's defense against it, because he's so versed in it. So it's a tough battle. It's a great battle on both sides of the ball because of that. But I think you always have to favor the Aztecs against Air Force's option offense because of Rocky Long's knowledge of it.
Well, Todd Leonard, I know the Aztecs are playing great this year. Already two victories over Power 5 foes, that being Arizona State and Stanford. And so we'll see how the Mountain West goes for you. I look forward to talking to you again as the Aztecs progress.
Great talking to you. Glad we did it.
We're sitting with Jim Arthur, the voice of the Air Force Falcons, heard on our sister station, 740 KVOR. Kickoff in a few hours, but Jim, you got San Diego State this week, the defending Mountain West champions. But coming off, let's go back to Michigan for a little bit. A Power 5 school, you guys played them tough. You had a lot of people in the big house scared.
Well, they were worried for a while. There's no doubt about that. Michigan's a good football team, and I think when you play schools like that, you've got to play like a near-perfect football game. And the Falcons, for the most part, were very good defensively. Offensively, they really couldn't get untracked. And the difference in the game, Luke Strabel missed a 29-yard field goal, which would have kept it at a one-possession game, and Donovan Peoples-Jones had a 79-yard punt return. And that was really the difference in that contest.
It really was, but you're not the only team that played a Power 5 conference in the past couple weeks. San Diego State defeated Stanford. So we know Stanford, but we saw them lose also earlier to USC, so we don't know how good Stanford is, but we do know a little bit about San Diego State. Donnell Pumphrey's gone, but they got someone who might be even a little bit better.
Yeah, that's Rashard Penny. He is very good. And not only that, but San Diego State's beaten two Pac-12 teams this year. They knocked off Arizona State. They're a legitimate 3-0, Tim. They're ranked 22nd in the nation for a reason. Rashard Penny, probably the best running back right now in college football. He leads the nation in rushing. He leads the nation in all-purpose yards. So he carries it 32 times against Stanford. He also catches five passes out of the backfield. That's 37 touches. And oh, by the way, he returns kicks as well. He's got six career kickoff returns for touchdowns, including one this year. The NCAA record is seven. Penny's a handful. And he sat behind Donnell Pumphrey last year. Didn't sit all that much because he ran for 1,100 yards as a backup last year. Really impressive. He's bigger than Donnell Pumphrey. He's 5'11". He's about 220. He can really run hard between the tackles. You can't bring him down with one guy. He is a load. There's no doubt about it.
I know Coach Troy Calhoun this week compared him to Eric Dickerson, and that's a very hefty comparison. I mean, because you look back at those Pony Express days at SMU, and Dickerson was unstoppable. But what does the Falcon defense have to do? Do they just key on him, or do they try to do something different?
Well, I think always, no matter who you're playing, you want to stop the run or slow it down and make teams one-dimensional. And I think that takes on even greater significance with San Diego State, because in a perfect world, Rocky Long's teams will run, and maybe throw it 14, 15 times a game. They want to control the clock. They lead the nation in time of possession at 37 minutes a game. So you got to get San Diego State's offense off the field. I don't know if you load the box and dare him to throw, because Christian Chapman's a good quarterback playing in his 27th game. He's got good receivers, Micah Holder on the outside, number six. He's got David Wells, the tight end, who caught the game-winning score against Stanford. There's a lot of different ways they can come at you. And I think what Steve Russ's defense is going to have to do is you really need to try to do a good job against that offensive line against San Diego State. They start two redshirt freshmen on the offensive line. I think you have to try to expose their youth a little bit. I don't know if you can, because Rashard Penny's run very well behind those two young freshman offensive linemen. But I think if you can force them into third and longs, that's going to be important. But that means you got to play awfully good on first and second down. I think that's where maybe the game gets won for Air Force. Can you limit Rashard Penny to, instead of 10, 12 yards a carry, maybe it's 3 or 4 yards a carry, especially on first and second down?
Well, let's flip the field for a second. Air Force on offense, we know they're not going to light up the stat sheet by throwing the ball. Throwing the ball 23 times this year, but the one completion against Michigan was the long touchdown. But what does Air Force have to do? They have to be more balanced against San Diego State, or are they just still just focus on the run?
No, I think they'll still focus on the run, but I think what they do have to do is they've got to show more variety with their running attack. I didn't think they showed that much, Tim, quite honestly, last week. You didn't see Air Force line up in a lot of formations, and they have as many formations as they have plays. And I think Troy Calhoun really didn't want to give conference opponents maybe a look-see at the entire offensive playbook. But I think Air Force has got to be more open to looking at different types of formations. They got to get the ball to Tim McVay more. Last week, he touched the ball 11 times. Against VMI, he had 13 rushes. Now, there's something wrong when you're carrying the football less against Michigan than you are VMI. You got to get it in the hands of your playmakers. You got to find Ty Williams more. You got to get it to Ron Cleveland, who caught that long touchdown pass from Arion Werthmann. You got to find the wide receivers. No wide receivers, true wide receivers, caught a pass last week. Gerard Sanders, who had two TDs against VMI, didn't see the ball. Marcus Bennett didn't see the ball. Get the ball in your playmakers and be a little more exotic with your rushing attack. That's going to be very important, because Rocky Long knows how to defend the option. He's played it when he was head coach at New Mexico. He's played it against at San Diego State. He knows what he's doing. Falcons got to think out of the box a little bit with their offense.
Well, Jim, looking forward to your call later this afternoon. Pregame, 3 o'clock on our sister station, 740 KVOR. Kickoff right at 5 o'clock. Jim, thanks for joining the University of Fish this morning.
Thanks, Tim.
Now, when we come back, we're going to go to big, boring football. That's what some people call it. I call it good, smash-mouth football. Of course, that's going to be Iowa and Penn State. We're going to Iowa City right after the break. Here on Extra Sports 1300, you're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
We're joined now by Mark Morehouse of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Mark, how you doing this morning? Big game today in Iowa City.
Yeah, it's I think both teams kind of find out who they are a little bit because neither team has really faced what I would call a college football blue blood. So it's kind of unveiling, it feels like.
It really is, and we know the last time a top 10 undefeated team came into Iowa City, that was last fall, Michigan went home with a loss. Are you seeing that this week? What is Iowa going to have to do to make sure that happens?
Well, if you think about it, sure, a Michigan result could happen, but last year, the week before Michigan, Iowa played at Penn State, and that didn't go well for Iowa. It was 41-14 Penn State. It was all Penn State. It wasn't really a game that I would say Iowa contested, really. But the next week they go and they beat Michigan. So it just shows you how weird college football is. And, you know, can Iowa contain Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley?
Well, now you've got a quarterback that he's not putting up huge numbers, but he's been very efficient. 10 TDs, only one interception, talking, of course, about Nathan Stanley. What has he got to do in the passing game against that Penn State defense?
I think it depends on how much how Penn State approaches him. If they put a lot of pressure on him, then that could open things up. But also, I really think that he needs some high-percentage passes, kind of get some confidence going early, and then I think Iowa needs to move the chains. If Iowa's going to win this game, it's going to have to win the time of possession battle decidedly. And so I think running game, yes, but I think short controlled passing games, high percentage passes so they can move the ball, move the chains, and keep that fantastic offense off the field.
Yeah, and you're talking about the running game. You got Wadley and Butler who are both putting up good numbers this year, but you also have Young that's gotten a lot of touches. Martin starting to see some touches, and then you have Marcette that has seen very limited play, but a very experienced and very well put together rushing attack for the Iowa Hawkeyes, isn't it?
Yeah, Akram Wadley is a do-it-all guy. He's not 220 pounds. That's really the biggest, not the only knock in his game. Iowa did lose James Butler last week. He had an elbow injury. He's out until after the bye. But the two freshmen, Torin Young and Ivory Kelly Martin, jumped in, and they combined 30 carries, 152 yards, and two touchdowns against North Texas. I'm not sure they're quite in the circle of trust yet, but Iowa really doesn't have any choice. I mean, I don't think they can afford to have Wadley carry 25 to 30 times in this game. They're going to need help from the couple of freshmen.
And you're going to need some help on defense because you've brought up the Penn State offense.
Absolutely.
You're looking at two possible Heisman Trophy candidates in Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley. What does the key need to be stopping Barkley running the ball, or does it need to be stopping McSorley from throwing the ball around the field?
Well, Penn State has done a great job of getting Barkley the ball in just all kinds of situations this year. He's averaging 11.2 yards a touch. That, to me, is amazing. Now, Penn State hasn't faced much more than a bowl of cornflakes yet this year. I mean, Pitt is not a good team, and that's been the best team they faced. But still, this is a team that and players in McSorley and Barkley who already have a big win over Iowa on their resume. So Iowa has to be, you know, absolutely watch the run. There's probably a number of big plays Iowa can give up. I'm going to say maybe three. Last year, I think Penn State in this game had four plays over 40 yards. That happens. Iowa is sunk.
And, yes, it is. And it's going to be a great game today in Iowa City. Mark Morehouse of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, thank you for joining the University of Fish today. Look forward to talking to you throughout the season.
You bet. Thank you.
We're joined now. We're going to Iowa City to talk with Ben from statecollege.com. Of course, that means he has to write for Penn State. Ben, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining the university this morning. Now, we know the last time a top 10 team went into Iowa City, they came back with a loss, that being Michigan last year. What does Penn State have to do to protect against that?
I think they just have to play their brand of football. I think this Penn State team knows who it is. It knows that it likes to, you know, throw it down the field, get these big plays from Saquon Barkley and play pretty stout defense. So I think if they're able to go in and win the turnover battle like they had the first 3 weeks, if they're able to go in and get the ball to all their different targets down the field and all the different weapons they have on offense, you know, that should be enough to win it. But like we've seen before with teams that have gone to Iowa, That's always easier said than done. Kirk Ferentz is a good coach, good defensive coach, too. So it's always easier said than done in Kinnick. But, you know, I think as long as they hit their targets down the field and play a solid defense, don't beat themselves. That's the game plan for Penn State this weekend.
Well, you bring up the targets down the field because when everybody thinks of Penn State, they think of McSorley and Saquon Barkley. But it goes much deeper than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, especially even after they lost Chris Godwin last year, who'd been sort of a go-to target. You know, Penn State still got Mike Gesicki, who leads the team in touchdown receptions right now. You've got a big guy like Juwan Johnson, who's good down the field. Saeed Blacknell, who's been around at Penn State for a while. And Deshaun Hamilton, who's been around for the entire length of the James Franklin era. All these guys have got a lot of games under their belt. You know, I think fans have been waiting to see if they can step up into that Chris Godwin role. He was a guy that could really bail Trace out of a lot of situations. But so far, you know, all of those guys, especially last week against Georgia State, were finally getting involved. Penn State scored 99 points before a receiver ever caught a touchdown pass. And I think now that they're getting those guys involved, you know, there's even more weapons that are sort of hitting their stride going into Big Ten play.
Well, we've seen Iowa for a few weeks now. They looked kind of vanilla against Iowa State, but then again, that is an in-state rivalry, just like, you know, everybody looks at the Penn State-Pitt game and then see what Oklahoma State did against Pitt. But once again, that's a rivalry game, so you can't really put a whole lot into that. But what does Penn State have to do to shut down the Iowa offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anybody that watches Iowa knows that, you know, especially this year, it comes down to slowing down the run game and getting to the quarterback. And I think, you know, Penn State's well-suited for that. I think that they've faced a lot of teams the first 3 weeks that have kind of tried to beat Penn State's defense by spreading the ball out and around. And I think, you know, Iowa's certainly been a consistent program because of the fact that they have been, you know, the same kind of team year in and year out. But I think almost to a certain extent it's to their detriment as well, because I don't think you're really going to get fooled when you're playing an Iowa team. It comes down to physicality and execution. And as long as Penn State is able to win in the trenches, which is something they still have to prove that they can do, and slow Wadley down in the backfield, you know, those are the two big things they've got to be able to do. But at the same time, you know, you look at the game last year where they were able to do that and pretty much blow Iowa out of the water. I think as long as, you know, they come in and execute well, that's going to be the big ask for Penn State against Iowa this weekend.
Well, Ben, as I look down the schedule, Penn State's got some big games coming up this year. We look forward to having you back on the University of Fish.
Yep, thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to take a break real quick, but when we come back, it's that time of the week, the time of the week that everybody waits for. I know I do. It's that time. It's time for Fish's Picks. When we come back from this break, here on Extra Sports 1300, you're listening to the University of Fish.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Okay, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Fish's Picks. We're joined right now by John Southers. Most people know him as the mayor of Colorado Springs. I know him as the guy that hit Ara Parseghian with a tennis ball in gym class while he's at Notre Dame. Mayor Southers, how are you doing today?
Well, I've recovered from that trauma many years ago and was sad to have Ara Parseghian depart this life.
And I do want to thank you once again for joining us when Coach Parseghian died. Let's get right into it. It's time for Fish's Picks. We're going to start off with a couple games that would be great for basketball, but we're talking football. Duke at North Carolina. North Carolina is getting 2.5 points. Duke fresh off the victory against Baylor, who's 0-3. Duke and North Carolina, who you got, Mayor?
I'm calling an upset. I think Duke is going to pull this one off.
You got Duke going in this. You know, with Duke beating Baylor and with Liberty beating Baylor, with Texas San Antonio beating Baylor, I've got to go North Carolina because I don't think that Baylor has anything this year, and so I don't think that Duke will be able to hang with the Fighting Tar Heels in Raleigh. So, you know, this game is actually not in Raleigh. It's in Chapel Hill. Raleigh's North Carolina State. They're not even in the game. But we'll go with Florida-Kentucky next. Another great ACC basketball matchup, but we're doing it on the gridiron. Kentucky getting 2.5 points at home against the Gators, who won by cardiac fashion with the Hail Mary this past week against Tennessee. Who do you got in this one?
I think Florida's going to get back on track, and they're going to win this one.
Florida has not shown me anything on offense all year, and it's hard for me to pick against anybody with the last name of Stoops. So I'm going for the Wildcats to get the upset at home against the Florida Gators, take Kentucky, getting 2.5. Now, UCLA coming off a tough loss at Memphis, taking on a Stanford team in Palo Alto. Stanford with two straight losses, one to USC, one to San Diego State. San Diego State may have one of the best runners in the nation, but he's not going to be on the field. Rosen's got a good arm. Who do you got in this one?
Well, I have a daughter went to Stanford. I got to stick with the trees. As you know, the tree is kind of the informal mascot, and you got to fear the tree.
And that is one of the ugliest trees you'll ever see in your lifetime. But I do think Stanford's going to be tough enough at home, even giving up 7.5. I think the Stanford defense will keep Rosen in check, take Stanford, giving up the 7.5. Next, we have an old Southwest Conference matchup. Texas A&M and Arkansas, this one being played in Jerry World in Dallas. So you've got Texas A&M favored by 3, Arkansas, the Razorbacks or the Aggies?
I'm going with the Aggies.
You're going with the Aggies. No reasoning.
Not much. I'm just going with the Aggies.
Well, there's not a whole lot of reasoning when it comes to the Aggies right now. I don't think Kevin Sumlin has a job at the end of the season. I'm going to take the Razorbacks and Brent Bielema to just wear them down. I don't think that A&M has seen an offense like Arkansas runs, because it's like a Big Ten offense, especially with Brent Bielema at the head. Take the Razorbacks, getting the 3 points. We're going local now. San Diego State, they've got a running back now that Coach Troy Calhoun of Air Force is calling the next Eric Dickerson. And Donnell Pumphrey set all sorts of records last year for San Diego State, but this new kid is even better, they're saying. Air Force getting 3.5 at home against the defending Mountain West champion San Diego State Aztecs. Who do you like?
Well, I'm the mayor of Colorado Springs. I don't think it would be very politic for me to pick anybody but the Air Force in this one, and I'm going with the Falcons.
Well, Mayor, I got to tell you, it's not an election year. You could do it right now, and it'd be forgotten by the time you're up for re-election. But we know you're going to be the next governor. That's just a joke, because they won't move the Capitol down here. But take the Aztecs giving up 3.5 at Falcon Stadium. The Aztecs will win it. They'll defend their Mountain West championship. The next, we have the only ranked versus ranked matchup of the weekend. That's the TCU Horned Frogs taking on Oklahoma State, that dynamic offense with Mason Rudolph and James Washington, and the mullet in Mike Gundy. They're giving up 13 points to the Horned Frogs. Who do you like in that one?
I am very impressed by the Cowboys, and I think they're gonna beat the spread.
Well, 13 points I don't think is near enough for TCU to overcome. I'm going to agree with you on this one, actually, and take the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Next, we have your alma mater, Notre Dame, coming off a bad loss a tough loss a couple weeks ago to Georgia. They're underneath touchdown Jesus. They're going up to East Lansing to take on Sparty, the little sisters in the state of Michigan. You got Michigan State getting 4 points with Notre Dame, or are you taking the alma mater?
I'm taking the alma mater. Can't do anything else.
Notre Dame, I think. Okay, Coach D'Antoni is going to get Michigan State back. This is not the year he does it. I've got to take Notre Dame, especially only giving up 4 points. Next, we go local again. Got an in-state team, Colorado, getting 10.5 to Washington. Washington was in the college football playoff last year. This year, we'll have to see what happens. But they're traveling to Boulder in the rarefied air. The Buffs or the Huskies?
I got to go with the Buffs. It's probably not the most prudent thing to do, but, got to go with the home team.
As we start working our way towards the Republican primary for governor, that will help you. Sorry, I got to make those jokes. But
they are jokes.
Yes, they are jokes. Anybody that's listening, Mayor Southers not running for governor. But anyway, So we got it. I'm got to take the Huskies. The Huskies have too much coming back this year, and Colorado showed last year against Washington that they weren't ready to play him. I think it's going to be the same way this year. Take the Huskies, giving up to 10.5, even if they're in Boulder. Now, Mississippi State taking on Georgia, a battle of Bulldogs. The Bulldogs from Starkville, or are we going between the hedges with the Bulldogs from Athens? At Athens, the Bulldogs giving up 5.5 to Mississippi State.
I'm going between the hedges with the Georgia Bulldogs.
And I know you're taking Georgia just because they beat Notre Dame a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's part of it.
I figured that was part of it, but Georgia at home, even if Eason isn't at quarterback, they're still not sure if he's 100%. So I've got to take Georgia at home. Georgia is going to win the game, even giving up the 5.5. Not a bad bet to make. Now, the biggest game in the Big Ten this week, Penn State looking like a world beater right now, but they traveled to Iowa. Iowa is getting 12.5 points. The last time a top 10 team went into Iowa City to take on the Hawkeyes, it was the Michigan Wolverines last year, and Michigan went home with a loss. Does that happen to Penn State this week?
I don't think so. I think the Nittany Lions are going to rise to the occasion to actually beat the spread.
I think, I mean, just because I like being combative with my pickers, I think that Iowa is going to keep the game close enough that the 10.5 is going to come into play. So take the Hawkeyes, getting the points. And that's what I think. We'll see how it works out on the other end of it. Mayor Southers, I know your time is valuable, even if it's a Saturday morning, but I want to thank you for coming on and joining us this week on the University of Fish.
Thanks, Tim. If you're right, I'm going to be wrong a lot, so we'll see what happens. Thanks.
Thank you again, Mayor John Southers. That's going to wrap up another episode of the University of Fish, but don't worry. If you miss part of it, go to iTunes, subscribe. You will never miss another episode. If you want to follow me on Twitter, just go to @FishOnFootball or look for University of Fish on Facebook, and you'll be able to keep up with me throughout the week. Tell me your picks for the big games of the week, and maybe I'll give them on the show as well. Now, coming up next, we have the Other Football Show with Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden right here on Extra Sports 1300. Class dismissed.